Welcome everyone to the Everything Bagel podcast. This is Emily.
And this is Shelby.
Today, we are going to be talking about Air of Fire and Assassin's Blade from the Throne of Glass book series.
Yes, but before we get into that, because we do kind of have a lot to talk about, Emily and I just binged Maxton Hall. It went viral on social media, especially TikTok, for the pool scene, and we kind of already talked about that in one of our recent episodes.
Yeah, I think it was the last episode.
Yeah, one of our episodes.
I said it was bad, but I
didn't. Yeah, we were like, it's overhyped. I had only watched, I think, like a half an episode, and you watched a couple, but it gets better. Each episode gets better. It was very, very emotional and dramatic, but I don't know about you, Emily, but I'm all about the drama.
Oh, yeah. Well, you like Vampire Diaries, so
yeah.
I feel like there's actually some similarities there. Like, it's just very dramatic, takes place a lot at school.
But the amount of times that Ruby, which is the main female actress in it, was, like, on the verge of tears. I felt like it was the whole time.
Did you notice that? She was just about to cry the whole time.
Yes, she was just about to cry the whole time. And you could totally tell that something traumatic happened to her. And then when she falls in the pool, we get to learn more about her and what actually happened to her. And yeah. So that was kind of sad. But overall...
And the last episode was actually so good. Overall, it was overhyped, but it does get better as the season goes on.
Like, it was actually pretty good. Would you say it's enemies to lovers?
Yeah, which I'm a sucker for enemies to lovers trope.
I love an enemies to lovers trope. It's originally in Dutch, and listening, so you can, there's like English voiceovers that you can listen to. Which is easy if you don't like reading subtitles, but I don't know, Emily, if you watched and listened to it with, or watched the subtitles and, like, was just watching it.
Yeah, and they were different.
They were different, and it threw me off. I was like,
and sometimes the subtitles were actually a better translation.
Yeah.
Than what they were saying.
Yeah, but then, like, sometimes weird. What they were saying was a better translation than the subtitle. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But for a second there, I listened to it just like how it normally is, and it was fun to hear their actual voices. But the voiceovers were actually very similar to what their voices actually sound like, and I thought that was good. We thought that it was pretty good acting. I thought
the main two characters were actually really good.
They were really good. You can tell that they're not American, which I thought was interesting. We also really liked the music.
The music was so good. They picked such good songs.
That is a playlist we will be we can't talk today, as always, that we will be listening to.
So anyways, if you want to watch Maxton Hall because it's gone viral, do it. There is some nudity in the last episode, so watch out.
Ooh, yeah. There honestly wasn't a ton of, like, spicy. There was only one spicy scene in the last episode. And
yeah, it's really clean up until that last episode, and then I'm like, why?
It was pretty explicit. Why? Honestly, I don't think they needed to go that far. They could have just kept it how it was the whole rest of the season. Kept it.
Yeah. Okay.
Maxton Hall. It's on Prime? Amazon Prime.
Not sponsored.
But I didn't like how there were ads. That was kind of annoying. Were there ads for you? There were ads for me.
I don't remember. Were there ads?
And they were so loud. Anytime a commercial comes on, it's like, and I have to mute it. It's so annoying.
Okay. Moving on, we are going to talk about Assassin's Blade and Era of Fire. So they are from the Throne of Glass series. Assassin's Blade is technically the prequel. A lot of people will read this one first.
Should we go into non-spoilers for both books first and then get into the spoilers?
Sure. So first of all, Assassin's Blade. We read Assassin's Blade after Era of Fire, right?
Yeah.
So between Era of Fire and Queen of Shadows. Era of Fire is book three.
Mm-hmm. That's the intended order by Sarah J. Maas. So that's why we read it. Do we want to talk about... Well, I feel like we should talk about the order because I might have some spoilers. So after we do non-spoilers, then let's talk about the order.
Yeah. So anyways, if you read Assassin's Blade first, this is why we are doing these books together, because we read these back to back.
Yeah, we read Era of Fire and then Assassin's Blade. And I actually really liked it in that order.
I liked it too, but we'll get into more.
I thought that this book was so fun. It was very adventurous. You really got to know Selena well. You got to know that she likes sweets and candy and just relatable. Kind of her personality and her humor.
Which, I'm not okay because I don't have a sweet treat during this episode.
Sorry.
Someone get me a sweet treat.
I should have gone to Maverick.
Right now.
Do you want some of this whipped cream from my drink?
No. I have those dark chocolate macadamia nuts over there, but...
Ooh. Not sweet enough, though.
No. not sweet enough.
In our last episode, you could totally hear you sucking on the candy.
I know. I'm so sorry. I was eating gummy worms, and you could totally hear me eating them.
We are literally Selena.
But anyways, yes.
So this book... First of all, she is 16 in this book, right?
Yes.
So she's
very impressive.
Super young. You see her assassin side, and that's super fun because we read Throne of Glass, Crown of Midnight, Air of Fire before this, and I felt like I didn't really get to know her, and I was like, who? They're just talking about this, like, Otterlin's greatest assassin, and I feel like I didn't get to see that a ton, and then once we read this, you really do get to see that.
Another non-spoiler about Assassin's Blade is there's kind of a twist at the end. And I think if we read this first, it's a lot more emotional because you don't see it coming. But when you read the first three books of Throne of Glass, you know what happens at the end of Assassin's Blade. And so you see it coming anyways.
Yeah, that
it's a whole different emotional journey.
I mean, it was still extremely emotional for me.
Yeah.
But I think reading it first, it just kind of heightens that a lot more because you have no idea what's coming. This book is in five novellas, right? Like four or five, something like that.
Yeah.
So there's different sections, and like on the book it says the Throne of Glass novellas. So it's, I'm pretty sure it's five different smaller books, but the book as a whole still has that like bell curve like leading into it, climax and resolution, with like a little bit of a cliffhanger at the end.
Yeah, so overall the book still has, it's still like one storyline, so it's very easy to follow. It goes in chronological order, but each of the novellas takes place in a different place.
Mm-hmm. And I liked that aspect of it.
It was really fun to read this book because you never really got bored.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Let's go into non-spoilers for Era of Fire and then talk about Assassin's Blade.
Okay, Era of Fire.
This book was, for me, I know this might be a little bit unpopular. I know that my mom really, really liked this book all throughout. She's literally flying through this series so fast. I started reading it and I was like, you have to read it, you have to read it. And then by the time I finished Queen of Shadows and started the tandem read, she started reading the series, and now she's already on Queen of Shadows and I'm still on the tandem read.
Jennifer caught up to us
so fast. Oh my gosh, she's such a fast reader. But she doesn't really have kids or anything, she just has work. She actually is so busy right now. She's
But you said that home. She listens and reads.
Yeah, she listens and reads at the same time. Which
I can get through books fairly fast when I listen, but we haven't listened to any of the Throne of Glass books. We've only been reading it.
I will buy the books and lend them to her, and then she'll buy the audio version of it. So that's how she does it. But yes. What I don't know what I was going on with that thought.
Well, it's kind of for Shelby and I, we both thought it was a bit slow throughout the middle. This book is super important. There's a lot of really important things that happen and really awesome things that happen. And it still is such a good book. It did just feel a little bit slow.
Yeah, and you meet a lot of new characters, which is really that's a fun part of it, and I liked that a lot. But it also is a little bit overwhelming at the same time, because there's all of these new characters and you're like, okay, who is who, what's happening, where are they, because we're still kind of going from this place to this place, and then this character and then this character, and then sometimes they'll meet up, sometimes they won't. So that part.
That's right, because in this book, the characters that were together for a lot of the other books kind of went their separate ways, and we still follow all the characters. So it goes back and forth between perspectives, kind of like what Shelby was saying, between Selena, and then it go back to Kale
and Dorian.
And Dorian, yeah.
Yeah.
And then new characters. But this book was also super important because of not just the storyline and the things that were actually happening, but Selena's personal growth.
Yes.
Was so essential for the rest of the series to happen.
And everything kind of changes in this book. If you're listening to this, you probably have read it, or at least part of it, so you know that there might be some fae and fairy stuff going on, and it kind of goes into that a little bit more. So with that aspect of it, it changes. And so I thought that was a fun part of this book as well. Is there anything else?
No, I think we should go into spoilers. Assassin's Blade.
Okay, spoilers for Assassin's Blade. Let's just go into just the order real quick, because I think you can read it literally in any order. You could read it before Throne of Glass. You could read it after Throne of Glass, after Crown of Midnight, and after Air of Fire. And I kind of want to go into explaining why. And there might be some spoilers right now, so if you haven't read all of them, maybe not listen to this, but if you're interested in when you should read it, you should listen to this. I'll try not to spoil as much as I can. But if you read it, so let's say you read it very first as the prequel. Assassin's Blade is the prequel book. It takes place when she's 16, when she's Otterland's best assassin. And we already mentioned this, you get to know her better, you get to see her as an assassin, and kind of just her life in that way. So it's fun to get to know the main character a little bit better and just chronologically read it correctly. Do you have any thoughts of reading it first?
Yeah. I mean, the intended reading order, like we said, is to read Assassin's Blade after Air of Fire, like we did. But so many people were like, no, read it first, read it first. I read it first. It was so much better that way. And I do understand that. Honestly, if someone were to ask us, I might tell them to read it first. I don't know. I feel like it might be more enjoyable that way. Pros and cons. The pros to reading it how we did was after Era of Fire, what is it, Queen of Shadows?
Yes.
There, it goes directly into important information, specifically from Assassin's Blade. So when you read Assassin's Blade before Queen of Shadows, that information is fresh on your mind and things make a lot more sense. But also, I had forgotten things that happened in Era of Fire because we read Assassin's Blade. Yes. So then I was like, wait, chronologically, I forgot things in Era of Fire because we had taken a break to read Assassin's Blade. So anyways, there's pros and cons
but to your, both. But your emotions definitely are heightened if you read it after Era of Fire, because all of the stuff that happens in Assassin's Blade with, like, Erebin and just some of the characters makes you so frustrated. And then we kind of jump right into that, into Queen of Shadows. So it does make a lot more sense to read it in that way, just like emotionally. But I also think you could read it after Throne of Glass or Crown of Midnight. And my reasons why, if you were to read Throne of Glass and then Assassin's Blade, would be so that you really fall in love with some of the other characters like Dorian and Kale in Throne of Glass. But I do think that would still happen if you were to read Assassin's Blade first, and then reading Assassin's Blade after Crown of Midnight is another good option, because a lot of things do change in Era of Fire, and you find out a big thing at the end of Crown of Midnight. So it is kind of fun just knowing that, reading Assassin's Blade and like reading who Selena is, but like knowing that big thing that happens in Crown of Midnight, I thought was fun in Assassin's Blade, because I'm like, okay, like I know this, so it kind of makes this more interesting and special in that way. So I don't think there's a wrong order to read it in. It just depends on what you're looking for. So if you want to get to know the main character a little bit better, I would read Assassin's Blade first. If you want a little bit, either way is emotional, but if you want like those heightened emotions going into Queen of Shadows, read Assassin's Blade after Era of Fire. If you don't want that like flip of everything's kind of different, then read it either after Throne of Glass or Crown of Midnight.
Yeah.
So let's get into it.
Okay. It starts out at Pirate's Bay. So, which I thought this was such a fun way to start off, like meeting our main character, because the storyline of her going to Pirate's Bay and duping, what's his name?
Rolf,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The pirate lord.
And, yeah, the pirate lord, and freeing all of his slaves was epic.
Uh-huh. Because she didn't like...
Oh, no, I'm saying epic again. I can't say that word. I'm banned.
Epic.
What's a synonym? Hey, Siri, what's a synonym for epic? It was so cool. It was so amazing.
You also...
It was fantastic.
We meet Sam at the
Sam
beginning
Cortland.
Of this book. And they're, like, really good friends.
You know what? They kind of had it out for each other.
Yeah.
More so Selena for Sam. Like, she was kind of mean to him. She kind of didn't like him at first, but they became close, and then they were sent on the mission together to Pirate's Bay, and I think that they worked well together.
Yeah.
And they kind of...
and they
became
just,
better friends after that.
They gained this friendship. I also loved, we find out that Sam, this is a little bit further on, but that he loves Selena, and she right? She yeah. never gets to tell him, which is so sad, and we can talk about that a little bit later. When we after we get into some other things,
emotional damage.
I know it's a very emotional book, and I don't remember where I was going with that. I lost my train of thought. I looked up synonyms.
Oh, for epic?
Yeah, heroic poem, saga, legend, romance, heroic. Monumental, grand, okay, vast. Like
it was monumental. It was grand.
Monumental, legendary.
Ooh, that's a good one. Okay, moving on to the second novella where we meet Irene, mm-hmm. which I love. And I loved Irene in this Irene book. Towers. But now that Shelby and I are in the tandem read, oh.
She's
I one love of the best characters. Irene. Spoiler. I mean, I don't think it's that much of a spoiler that no. she comes back, because when we finished Assassin's Blade, I'm like, she's coming back later. Like, she's going to be important later. I think it's very obvious. And spoiler, she is in yes. Tower of Dawn. She's one of the main characters, and I am obsessed with
and
her.
The way that I imagine her in my head, she's just, like, beautiful. Like, perfect skin.
I mean, every massive, character kind of is.
I know. Massive hair. Just, like, I imagine her, I don't know if she talked about, like, her height or anything, but I imagine her, like, kind of tall and skinny.
I imagine her, like, kind of you, Shelby, like, similar height
mm-hmm.
and figure, but darker, a little darker skin and hair.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I like And she her. Has, what, like, hazel eyes or something?
Yeah.
Like, golden brown eyes or mm-hmm. something like
her,
that.
Her eyes are cool. So we find out that Irene is a healer, which is a cool power. And then that comes to play a little bit later, possibly. And
so she's working at a tavern, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not great life for her. And Selena comes through and ends up kind of teaching Irene some self-defense in the alley.
mm-hmm. And which is awesome. I love... That's, like, another thing that we get to see about Selena is how willing she is to help other people, especially mm-hmm. women that aren't capable of defending themselves and protecting themselves, because I think she knew she used to be like that, and she wants other women to be able to, like, defend themselves. And I thought that that was...
Yeah, and it's one of those...
Legendary...
It's one of those moments in Assassin's Blade that really, I mean, the character development is incredible, because it highlights Selena's character at her core, because she's, if you remember, she's trying so hard to not care. She's like, nope, I'm not going to help this girl. Like, I don't care. It's not my business. It's not my responsibility. And then she can't help it. She, like, has to help her.
Yeah.
She's like, dang it, why do I feel pity on her? Like, I need to help her. And then she's like, tell every woman you know, teach this to as many girls and women as you know. And
yeah.
Anyways, so Selena's influence and reach really was multiplied through Irene.
Mm-hmm.
Love that. And then, of course, Selena gives Irene all of the money so that she can live her dream.
Yeah, and it just, like, goes to show how much Selena does care. And she saw something in Irene, and she helped her out.
And if you are... If you haven't finished this series yet, just keep reading, because I am so excited for this full circle moment
mm-hmm.
because Irene doesn't, I can't say, but Irene doesn't know certain people are connected.
Yes.
And it's about to come full circle, I think.
Mm-hmm.
either in the books we're reading now or next book, and it is going to be so good. Legendary.
Yes, when they all reunite. A few characters, you know.
Yeah. True.
So it'll be, it's like just another Game of Thrones parallel, how they're all like separated for most of the season, and then the last season they finally like reunite with each other, and you're like, so finally long. That's how I feel in this
that
one.
That is so true.
Like we're gonna come together in the last book.
Like the way the siblings in Game of Thrones kept narrowly missing each other, I was like screaming at the TV. I feel that way. These books sometimes.
Same. There's so many storylines to keep track of. And I'm like, whoa, okay, I gotta take a second, think about who I'm reading. Not in these books, but in the tandem read.
Yeah.
Let's keep going.
Okay, the next novella is going to the Red Desert. So she takes on a job. What do you call it? An assignment.
Yeah.
To go to the Red Desert. Arabin kind of sends her away. Oh, yeah, because sends her away. To punish her for what she did to Rolf.
Mm-hmm.
For sabotaging the assignment.
She was just trying to be a good person, though.
Yeah. So she gets sent to the Red Desert, which I was kind of like, that's a very mild punishment from Arabin, because the Red Desert ended up being kind of awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, wow, some punishment. Go train and be better at your job.
Yeah.
Oh, dang it.
Like, yeah.
I was like, okay, cool. But she meets some cool characters. Her assignment is to get a letter. Is it like a letter of recommendation from the Mute Master?
Yeah.
And she also meets Ansel, who is her roommate, and she kind of becomes friends with her.
And their friendship was so good. Like, I was so excited.
I know.
For that friendship.
The betrayal of this book.
And I honestly, like, go Sarah J. Maas, because she really makes you like Ansel.
Yeah.
A lot, like, super quickly, and you really, really like their relationship, their friendship with each other. And then she just has to ruin it.
Sabotage.
And be a biatch.
And we have also predicted that she's going to come back into play later on, and so far we haven't seen her back yet, so mm-hmm. I'll be very interested to see
if she comes
back, if we see
and
her
how. Mm-hmm. I think that she will come back and help,
well, because Selena ended up sparing her life even after everything that Ansel had done. So I think because Selena spared her life and didn't need to, like, she had every opportunity. She had the knife at Ansel's throat.
Yeah.
I don't know if literally or theoretically. I don't remember exactly what happened, but she could have killed her, and she spared her life and let her go. So I think that was setting up for Ansel to come back later and join the cause later on.
Join the posse. one thing that I thought was freaking cool in this part were the Astran horses or whatever?
Astran horses that they steal. Scene was awesome, because they're like, let's steal these horses, and they're super rare. They're worth so much money. Loved that. Mm-hmm. And I loved reading about it after reading some of the other books, because Selena mentions in passing, oh, I used to have an Astran horse, and someone's like, what? That's like, how did you get one of those?
Mm-hmm.
And she's just like, it's a long story.
And they can like jump, like they're super fast and they can jump super high. There were parts where I was like, are they flying? Like, can these horses fly? But they were just jumping high. It was cool. I want one of those horses.
The next novella takes place a lot at the Assassin's Keep. So we see more of Arabin and their life at the keep. Arabin has suits made for Sam and Selena.
Mm-hmm.
Although he makes Sam pay for his suit, which is messed up.
And gives it to Selena.
And gives it to Selena as a gift.
That's when we see Selena asks them to put the spider silk that she had. This is when we learn about the spider silk.
And she bought that spider silk.
Yeah, who did she buy it from? That's what I couldn't remember.
She traded it at a market.
Uh-huh.
And got a little tiny square of spider silk. And she saved it, and she, oh, okay, my heart. Because in this novella, she gives it to the suit maker and was like, can you have this put in? But it makes it seem like she's having it put in her own suit.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end,
we find out that she put it in Sam's suit, but that it actually saved his life because he got shot with an arrow, right? Mm-hmm. And he would have died from that arrow, and she saved his life. So I thought that that part was cool. But at the end, I also was like, where's the spider silk? Like, she needs that.
Yeah.
She needs to put it in her suit.
Exactly.
Now.
Yes. We never got resolution with that.
The description of her assassin suit was so bad, eh? I was like, I want this. I need this suit.
I know.
I want to dress like that. Next, I don't know if it's in the next novella or this one, but we get to meet Lysandra.
Yeah. And we don't like her.
She's kind of a bee. And she's a little bit annoying and stuck up. And Arabin
kind of uses Lysandra for many reasons. First and foremost, to get under Selena's skin.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just the worst. Arabin's treatment of Lysandra.
And he makes Lysandra, like, sleep in his bed with him. They go on this double date, like, Selena, Sam, Arabin, and Lysandra. Do they go to the symphony? Or, like, the opera or something like that? And is that when we have that, like, super descriptive music scene? I know it's in this book.
She goes to the symphony, like, several times.
Yeah, because she loves, and that's another thing we find out in this book, is how much she loves music, and that part was a good part. But I thought that double date, it literally was a double date. It was so awkward. Funny to me. And, like, Arabin is trying to make Selena jealous.
Talk about uncomfortable dates.
Yes.
Talk about bad dates. My boss and his going on a date with your coworker, your boss, and your boss's escort.
This chick that you just hate. That sounds like a horrible date, but she actually loves the music, so it was great.
Okay, then in this book, Selena pays off all of her debt that she owes to Arabin and Sam's
debt. She wants to kind of part ways with Arabin because she's starting to realize that he's using her a little bit, and he's not really the man that he, like, portrays himself to be, if that's how you would even say that.
So she kind of just doesn't want to be contractually tied to him anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, well, I'll just pay off all my debt to you. And I think she is okay still taking jobs from him.
Yeah.
But she just wants to live on her own. And we quickly find out that it's just not possible.
Yeah. But then he, like, won't give them jobs because he's like, well, you have to find your own jobs now. And so he was kind of bitter about it because he's in love with Selena as well.
Yeah, he loves her in a terrible, manipulative, awful way.
Yes, that man is so manipulative. Ugh, nasty.
And then they end up taking the contract to kill Jane, who is the crime lord, from Arabin. And I don't know if you saw it coming, but he was never going to let them get away.
Nope.
And it was all a setup, and Sam ends up dying, which is the worst.
Uh-huh.
And this is the part of the book that, like, we knew was going to happen because we didn't read Assassin's Blade first.
Yeah, so we knew that there was this guy, Sam, that she loved, but she never ended up telling him, which is so heartbreaking. And then we find out that, so they, like, do this thing. Sam wanted to protect her and kill Farron, right? Or Farron or Jane. I don't remember. I think he was like, you can't go alone to go kill Farron or whatever. So he said he was going to do it. It was all a setup. And they ended up taking him and, like, horribly torturing him. And then I think it was Farron that sent Sam's body back to Selena to, like, basically prove, you know, that he's actually dead and what they did to him. And then she, she smells the cheap soap on him that, because she wouldn't let him use her expensive soap. And that, that part got me so bad. Like, I was just crying at that part because you're like, if you've ever experienced, like, a loved one dying, then you know that there's those things that you're like, I could have done this, or what if this happened, or what if I did this and I could have prevented it, or I should have done this, you know, you just have those what ifs, I should have. And it's honestly not good to think that way, but you do think that way when someone so close to you has died. And that just, like, hit me hard because I've lost someone close to me that I just felt that in that moment, like, because I've had those thoughts, I've had those moments, like, what if I just did this, what would have happened if I did this thing differently, or I should have done this thing, you know. So she, you know, she had those thoughts of, I should have just let him use the soap. Yeah. Like, why didn't I just let him use my soap? Why didn't I just do this for him? He probably would have still been alive. And every time I see fan art or, like, a TikTok or something of Sam, I just start tearing up and crying. And
it is the worst, truly.
So even though we read it knowing that he was going to die, it still was so... emotional, because we didn't know how,
and you're just dreading it the whole time because you do fall in love with Sam during Assassin's Blade, even though you don't want to, because you know we're gonna lose him at the end. And yeah, the moment where she, Arabin takes her to see his body and she smells the soap on him, and it just, it's like she realizes that things that she thought were important are not important. And that was heartbreaking. It's like the worst, because it is, and it's also part of what makes Selena who she is. And going through that experience and realizing certain things in life that you thought were important are just totally irrelevant.
Like, she really likes the materialistic things, but then I think this is a moment. She's a
material girl.
She's a material girl. I think this is one of the moments that kind of makes her realize those things aren't as important, and the people that I love in my life are more important.
And this is going to spoil Era Fire a little bit. So if you haven't read, well, if you haven't read up till there, don't skip the next, like, 30 seconds. But I think going through that experience, you know, realizing material things aren't as important set her up for being a good match for Rowan. Because, you know, Rowan, he's no Dorian, you know, like, he is a warrior. And he is, and the opposite of a material girl.
Yes, and he just has so much, like, baggage, because he's old. He's an oldie.
He has 500 years of trauma.
Is he the oldest Fae that we've read about in these books? I think he is. Well, no, because I guess Rhysand and them are, like, 500 years.
Oh, you're talking about the entire Massverse?
The whole Massverse.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought Lorcan is also really old.
Lorcan. I think he's the oldest. Series. Which is so off. But Lorcan. I can't wait until we talk about the tandem read. But one part towards the end of this book that was so cool, was it after she got sent to Endovir?
Yes. During the journey.
Yes, that's what it is.
Endovir? Endovir?
Endovir? I don't know. Endovir? She sees the white stag, which symbolizes the Lord of the North of Terrasen. Mm-hmm. And it's like magic, or it symbolizes magic and kind of gives her some hope
She
will.
I think she was at rock bottom.
Yes.
And it was sent to her to tell her to keep going.
Mm-hmm. And give her hope, and just that little grasp of, I'm going to find my way back home, you know, and I'm gonna get through this.
Okay.
Along those lines, we want to talk about something that is a spoiler. So if you haven't read further on,
you have to have at least read through Crown of Midnight.
Yeah.
If you have not finished Crown of Midnight, I am begging you to not listen to this. Like, begging you. Because this will ruin your reading experience. So this is your chance to stop now.
So in terms of the white stag and the Lord of the North to Terrasen and that hope of her finding her way back home, it's kind of a foreshadow to her being Aelin, and that Terrasen is her home and that's where she's from.
And I'm just now realizing this, because when I read Assassin's Blade, I didn't think too much of it. I just thought, oh, you know, it's a symbol of hope. But I'm just now realizing, if you read Assassin's Blade first, you didn't know that Celaena is technically the queen of Terrasen.
Mm-hmm.
And so they send the symbol of the, what is it, the Lord of the North, the Lord of Terrasen, to her. And she makes eye contact with it.
I think that kind of stuff is so, like, you could dissect that. Like, what does that mean? Why was it sent at this moment? I think those things are so cool. Yeah. And there are, like, some moments like that in Game of Thrones with, there's one animal that I'm trying to think of in Game of Thrones that I can't remember, but I know that happens with, like, the direwolves and stuff, and just kind of how, like, oh, you see, they'll see the direwolf and know that, well, like, their sibling is nearby or something like that.
You know what's super interesting is in House of Dragon, the white stag specifically is the symbol. So you remember when there's a new royal heir born, they go out hunting?
Yeah.
And Rhaenyra sees a white stag. Ooh. And it's like, it's like a symbol.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's a sign. And instead of hunting it, she lets it go.
Hmm.
And then the rest of the hunting party the next day, they like capture a regular old stag.
I love the white stag.
So I thought that was interesting that it's the same animal.
That is crazy. I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what came out first, Game of Thrones or these books? Because Game of Thrones were books.
Yeah.
Let me look this up. I just have to know.
Okay, we'll pause for a second.
Okay, we just looked it up. Game of Thrones books came out in 1996. So I bet you anything Sarah J. Maas is a Game of Thrones fan.
There's a lot of parallels. Mm-hmm. She could definitely be. And we've talked about this before, but it's not copying. Like, I don't have any less respect for Sarah J. Maas. Artists take inspiration from other artists all the time. And there's lots of just symbolism from history that writers and screenwriters pull from. And there's a lot of animals like the crow that has a lot of symbolic meaning throughout history. So a lot of books and movies also use other animals regularly as symbols, like the crow. So anyways.
Yeah. That's fun. And then
That's fun.
That's cool. Sometimes I respond and I don't even know what I'm saying. I say, that's cool, or that's fun so much. Yours is, that's epic.
Well, sometimes I forget to respond.
Yeah.
And I hate that.
Yeah. You do. And then I'm like, I'm so sorry.
And then I'm listening back to the episode as I'm editing and I'm like, oh, I really liked what Shelby said. But I'm like so focused on like other things at the same time that I sometimes don't.
Yeah. Now that we have hear two everything mics. You say. Now that we have two mics, I think it'll be
a little bit better. Two mics is the best. This is our first hopefully episode this filming actually with two works. Microphones.
Recording. Yeah. The last thing in Assassin's Blade that you're kind of like high on emotion with is that you figure out as a reader, Selena doesn't know, but as a reader, you figure out that Arabin is the one that betrayed her. And so you're so mad, so pissed off at which that freaking man.
I was not surprised at that. Yeah. Like, I think as readers, we knew.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really frustrating because Selena's really smart and you're like, why did she not see this coming? How did she fall into his trap? Because she never falls into anyone else's traps. She always, like, she's just super smart and she sees things coming. So the fact that Arabin was able to manipulate her in that way is frustrating. But you also have to remember that the relationship between her and Arabin is extremely difficult.
Extremely manipulative.
Yes.
And she's young.
I mean, he saved her life. She is young. She basically had nothing. And he gave her a job, a place to live, you mm-hmm. know, clothes, food. And he showers her. Like, the love bombing that Arabin does yes. is so messed up. The love bombing, you guys. All of the expensive gifts and stuff. So it is hard because part of you is like, okay, we hate him. Obviously, it was him. But at the same time, you have to remember she didn't want to believe it was him.
Yeah. But there's, and I'm sure everybody can think of a person that's like this. There's so many people that are like that in real life. Like, it is very common to have that manipulative, narcissistic personality or encounter somebody like that. And he was just selfish. And he wanted what he wanted, and he loved Selena. And yeah,
but if he really loved her, he wouldn't have done the things he did. He loved power more than he loved Selena.
Yeah, very true. And money.
Yep. Okay.
Okay.
Moving on to
Air of Fire.
That was great. Good job.
So getting right into it, we meet one of the best characters right
Rowan
away.
Rowan White.
Isn't it Thorn?
Oh, right. White Thorn.
White Thorn or White Horn. Wait. I always say White Thorn.
Wait, I can't Google it because spoilers.
Hold on.
Don't ever Google Rowan's name.
Let me look. Because
I have spoiled things for myself.
But wait, also, what have you spoiled?
It's not that serious, but it has to do with his name. So don't do it, guys.
Wait. The man, male. As Faye, tall, broad-shouldered, every inch of him seemingly corded with muscle. He was a male, blooded with power. He paused in a dusty shaft of sunlight, his silver hair gleaming. First of all, he has silver hair. I'm a dark hair girly. It doesn't say his name. We love him.
Yeah,
but you really don't. Okay. You do kind of start to really like him in this book, but at the beginning, you're like, who is this guy?
I mean, he's just not having it, which, can you blame him? It's this 500-year-old Fey warrior who's been assigned to babysit this, how old is she, 18 at this point? 19?
Around, yeah, 18, 19.
You know, this young, stubborn girl. And obviously once he gets to know her and stuff, that changes. But the amount of brooding that they do when they're assigned, like they're both forced to be with each other.
Yeah.
We love the forced proximity, by the way. We love that trope.
I think it's so funny how
I mean, I don't know if this is actually how it was, but I just imagined them, like, in the woods the whole time. Because they're, like, traveling, right? The pretty much...
They do a lot of hiking.
They do a lot of
a lot hiking, of camping.
And it's just them.
It's just them, yeah. And that's part of the reason why this book can be really slow is because it's, like, a lot of walking through the forest for days on end with Rowan and Selena. But I low-key... love that.
Yeah, the image that I had so of funny. Like the forest that they were in was like redwood giant trees type of forest, and when they're in this phase or whatever traveling, he's taking care of her, trying to teach her magic, trying to get her to shift. Like I feel like it took so long for her to finally shift.
I was going to say this before, but they are two very, very stubborn characters. Yes. And it's just funny because it's just like a brooding match. Who's going to break first? Uh-huh. Who's going to give in? Because they are both so stubborn. Mm-hmm. And it is so funny.
But I don't know if this is the first time she shifts, and you can correct me if you remember, but he bites her.
Yes. No, oh, I remember this vividly.
He, bites her and, like, licks her blood or whatever, you know? And then that's when she shifts for the first time, isn't it?
And do you remember I was Marco Poloing you and I was like, Shelby, there's something, like, my brain chemistry has been altered too much from reading fantasy books and there's something actually wrong with me.
Because you liked
Because it. I was like... He bit her. I love it. And then, like, he had her blood on, like, dripping down his chin. And I was like, love that. And then I was like, what's wrong? I have a problem.
Yes.
Well, I need therapy.
I'm all about the biting and, like,
oh, are
sucking
you?
Blood because...
Oh, because you're a vampire.
I'm a Vampire Diaries girly. You know what I'm so excited to read?
What?
From Blood to Ash.
Yeah.
Woo! Anyway,
if you've read that, let us know.
So that part I was like, ooh, vampire moment.
Ooh,
but why did he have to bite her?
I don't know. They were like bickering and he just knew that that was going to set her off.
That's like one thing.
He just knew that it would trigger her.
I feel like Rowan just like knew her, like just knew how she ticked right away.
Yeah.
And
like he was able to read her more than anyone she'd, I think, ever met.
And it's probably because he's so old.
I think it's a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
Which we won't say.
Yeah. Another thing.
Spoilers.
Yeah. Another thing.
Well, we are in the spoilers for this book. I mean, we find out later that they're Karanom.
Yeah.
So.
Which is so
they're
cool.
Connected on another level.
And if you don't remember what Karanom is, I always got it mixed up with Callan May or Callan Mai.
Very different.
Very, very different. Callan Mai is a like a solar event or something, right? In Akhtar. But Karanom is where you explain it. You're better explaining it.
Karanom just means that you can siphon energy or power from the other person. So if Selena and Rowan are Karanom, then, like, if her power's running out, he can push his own power through her.
Yeah.
They can share power.
Which is so cool. I feel like I haven't read or seen anything that is kind of like that. Another thing I wanted to talk about was the way that he describes the power. So we know that she's Aelin and she hasn't been able to use her power for a long time or even really at all that much. And he's kind of teaching her about how it works and what it feels like and looks like in your body. And I can't remember what character it is that explains it as like a pit with a bottom. It might have been Rowan or Dorian or Selena.
I think it's Rowan.
Does he explain it like that? And like you can hit the bottom of the pit and use all of your power, but you also can preserve it and like decide how much you want to use and like how to use it and when to use it. But didn't he also go into how you kind of need to release it?
Yes.
Every now and then?
Like if you go too long without using any power, then it kind of gets pent up and it makes you like jittery and anxious.
Yeah. Which we see in other series of Sarah J. Maas. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's fun to
right. kind of have that's those like parallels. The reason why the Illyrians like Azrael and Cassian have siphons so they can put their pent up energy in the siphons.
Yes.
And save it for later. Like leftovers container.
Leftovers.
I'm going to save that for later.
Yeah. But I love Sarah J. Maas's description of those things. Like this is the power and how it works and what it feels like. And then each character kind of has their own version of what it feels like, especially Dorian. And because his magic is a little bit different or his power is different, whatever. We also find out, and I think I have it in here. We found out on page 136 that Selena has had this hawk kind of around her, right? And we find out that that is Rowan's
yes.
animal Rowan's form.
Rowan's animal form is a hawk.
And I thought that that was cool. I also was like, I feel like we could have had a cooler animal form for our Rowan.
For our fey like, prince.
Why couldn't he have been a lion or a...
It is cool that he can fly, though.
That is cool. I like that. I also always imagined it as an owl and less of a hawk. A hawk
is way bigger.
Than an owl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, also in this book, we meet Adian, who is Selena's cousin, Aelin's cousin. We can say Aelin, right?
Yeah, we can say Aelin. People know.
And at first, we don't like him, but then we kind of realize it's kind of like a character he has to play so that the king will trust him.
Mm-hmm. Him and Aelin, I think we go into this, into the Queen of Shadows episode, but... They look very, very similar. Like, they have yeah. the blue eyes with the gold rim. They both have bright blonde mm-hmm. hair. And their features are very similar. Like, they could almost be identical twins.
Yeah. And I just have to say, Kale is maybe not the brightest person ever. Uh-huh. Because he just spent all that time with Selena, Aelin, and then he meets Adian, and he doesn't put it together until somebody tells him. And then he's like, yeah. Oh, no dur, like, they look identical.
And Kale is, like, the only one at this point that knows
who she
is.
Oh, yeah.
Like, who she actually is,
you know? And has spent time with both of them.
Yeah. And we find out that Adian is also half fae,
mm-hmm.
which is cool.
And his animal form is
a wolf,
which is cool, very... fitting. Uh-huh. Also, the other thing I was going to say is Adian and Aelin are not first cousins. They're like distant relatives. So why do they look so similar?
I don't know.
They literally look like twins. Like, but
we also find out that there's a connection, and I don't know the details. I don't remember I don't remember the details of how Aelin, Selena, and Rowan are kind of related, like with Maeve, right?
Oh yeah, but I think it's funny that they specifically say, and this is very fuzzy in my memory, but what I do remember is Maeve describing their relationship, because Maeve is like, I'm related to both of you, mm-hmm. but very, very distantly, mm-hmm. and so she's like, don't worry, you guys like aren't very closely related at all.
Don't worry.
And I like that
she just knows
they have to put that disclaimer in there.
Yes.
So that Aelin and Rowan can still be like lovers later.
Yeah, it's not a Game of Thrones.
Oh, Cersei gosh.
And Jaime.
Oh, please no. I can't handle that. Why?
Or even what's their buckets?
Yeah, no.
No.
Oh,
Jon and
Game of Thrones spoiler.
Daenerys.
John and Daenerys. Oh, wow. That's such, incest. That's such a good show.
But Adian also gives weird vibes. He's just like, he's in love with Selena.
We talk about this in more so in Queen of Shadows, but yeah, the vibes are weird. Adian's obsession with Aelin is weird.
You don't but really he, start to like him that much in this book. Like, no. I didn't really like him in this book at all.
No. And then he was okay in Queen of Shadows.
I'm starting to like him more in the Tandem Raid. I'm like, okay. Yeah, he's a ride or die.
Yeah, ride or die. We do love his loyalty to his queen.
Yes.
We stan.
Yes.
Okay. We meet Manon in this book.
Yes.
The witch.
Manon Blackbeak.
And
with iron claws and teeth.
Okay, she's another character that I wasn't sold on in this book.
Nope.
I am starting to love her now. And I think it was done this way on purpose, but the Manon chapters in Air of Fire were so, so hard for me to read. Like, I was so bored. I literally couldn't. I had to skim it. I couldn't focus because I was so bored. I was like falling asleep during the Manon chapter. So
same.
But it's
I had to just go important. Through and look because luckily it was like her name as the first thing in all of her chapters pretty much or in the first sentence. So I had to go through and like reread all of those chapters together. And then it.
That's so smart.
It kind of made it a little bit more interesting to me because it was spread out so much that you're like, oh, I forgot what happened in her last chapter and she's not that interesting, but her chapters are important because you get to, you hear about her grandmother and that she has these 13 witches called the 13 that are like on her team, on her side or whatever. And they work together, so you just, you find out a lot about Manon that comes to play later in the books. Yeah,
and that's the thing about these books and other series that some people think are slow, is the character development and the world building is so extensive that sometimes it takes us a long time to get to know the characters and to like them. So Manon is definitely a long haul. Like, it's boring, but it's important to still read those chapters because her character building just takes so long.
But if you just finished this book and are like, I can't do it, just keep reading because it gets so much better. And I actually really do like Manon.
And it goes a lot deeper into her background and who she is as a person. And you will like her more. So just keep reading.
Like, she actually is a really good character.
The chapter in Empire of Storms.
Yes.
Mm, that was crazy.
Yes. The witches choose their wyvern. Mm-hmm. Wyvern. I don't know how you say it.
I say wyvern because that's how it was said in the Empyrean series audiobooks.
Yeah, I think I say wyvern in my head too. And she chooses Abraxos, which is...
Love.
Well, there was kind of like this duel between her and Iskra, right? One of the 13. I'm pretty sure these chapters are out of my memory.
I just remember her choosing Abraxos.
And she... They like both wanted this specific wyvern. But then that wyvern ended up like dying or like getting killed or something. I seriously can't remember the details of it, but she ends up choosing Abraxos, which is kind of like the underdog wyvern, and he's like a little puppy of a dragon, or can we call them dragons? They're a breed of dragon, yeah. Right?
The wyverns are basically dragons, but the way it's described in the Empyrean series is that wyvern just have their
hind legs.
Yeah, their hind legs and then their wings.
Yeah, yeah.
But other than that, they're like pretty much
dragons. They're pretty much a dragon. This also gave me Fourth Wing vibes reading it. Yeah. I was like, whoa, am I reading Fourth Wing?
I love that Throne of Glass has everything.
I know, it has animals. It has
fae, humans, animals.
Witches.
Magic, witches, dragons. Like, it leaves nothing out. It has everything you could ever want in a fantasy series.
Then we get into where they go and meet Maeve, or they go and see her, and She's Aelin to me now. She has to show her powers to kind of like prove herself, and she kind of blows up a little bit here. And this is when we get to see more of Aelin's powers, because we haven't really seen like a lot from her in that.
Yes, and yeah, I love this because we finally get to see the extent of her powers, and I don't even think we have seen the full extent yet.
I don't think so.
I don't think it's gonna happen till the last book, but
she was a little.
She sets the entire city on fire.
Yeah, she was a little hot-headed in that moment.
But that's Aelin for you.
And it kind of goes back to when Rowan was like, "You can control how much you use," and she just doesn't know how to do that yet. And so it went a little haywire. She just
unleashes her power on Maeve. And I love that. I mean, we really understand at this point that she is ride or die for Rowan, which I'm like, yes. I love that she does this for him. And I mean, at this point, she is just like, he's my best friend. He's the one person that really knows me, that really understands me. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so the ending of Air of Fire, love. They do the blood oath.
Mm-hmm. Let's, before we talk about that, we haven't really talked about Dorian or Kale at all. Kale in this book, to me, just was, I kind of got bored at those parts.
Yeah.
I'm still obsessed with Dorian, but what are you going to say?
Anyways, no, but I actually really loved the bromance, the friendship
between
Dorian and Kale. Yes. They became besties during this book, and they actually really started to like trust each other and use each other, lean on each other.
I mean, I think they were already besties before this, but this is when we as a reader get to see it a lot more.
Yeah.
And they became get a lot closer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I honestly really liked that friendship. I thought it was freaking adorable.
I forgot about that until you
I was like, let's go. Up. Yeah.
And then we meet Sorsha. What is Sorsha again? A scribe or not a scribe?
She's a healer.
Oh. She's a healer? I don't remember.
She is a healer, I believe. Okay, I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure she's a healer. But because she, you know, works for the king and all that jazz, she can't use any magic. So she mostly just uses herbs and potions.
Because they can't use magic in wherever they
are. So she's a healer, but she mostly just mixes ingredients.
And her and Dorian's relationship is super tender and sweet, and you like are just so happy for him.
I love seeing Dorian like flirt.
What's
not to love about watching Dorian flirt with a girl?
It's honestly so innocent. It's so sweet, and I just was so happy for him. And then she had to die.
Then the freaking ending.
Yeah, she dies, gets her head chopped off, and then Dorian goes crazy and he releases his magic, and his magic is ice.
And yeah, that's he loses part. It, but only for a split second before the collar is put on him.
Yeah, and then his dad, the king, locks him up, puts a collar on him. And that part is kind of heartbreaking. We get into the ending. So let's talk about all of that stuff. I want to read this part. It's the blood. Sorry. It's the blood oath. The end of this book is so good, and there's so many things in it that's like wow. First of all, Aelin and Rowan are Karanam. We already talked about that. We get to the blood oath part. So Aelin wants Rowan freed from Maeve, and just here, starting on page 515 of Air of Fire, they kind of describe the blood oath. So they say, Maeve says, a blood oath is eternal. And then Aelin is like, I don't care, free him.
Which Aelin has made blood oaths in the previous books that we've read about, like to Nehemia.
Yeah. That's right. I forgot about that. Oh my gosh. And then Maeve goes on to say, my blood that flows in you, through no dishonor, through no act of treachery, I hereby free you, Rowan Whitethorn, of your blood oath to me. So that part is like weight lifted off of your shoulders. He's finally free. Also look at it here, how it's spelt. W-H-I-T-E-T-H.
You're right. It's Whitethorn.
And then we get into, they start, oh, he's saying like, Aelin, a prayer, like Sarah J. Maas says, a prayer, Aelin. Just like the way that he says her name in this, I'm like, ooh, okay. And he wants to make the blood oath to her. And she's like, I'm not going to make you do that. Like, I don't want you tied to me. And they're talking mind to mind. Like, Rowan's face was calm through steady, assured, trust me. I don't want you enslaved to me. I want to be that. I won't be that kind of queen. And then he says, you have no court. You are defenseless, landless, and without allies. She might let you walk out of here today, but she could come after you tomorrow. She knows how powerful I am, how powerful we are together. It will make her hesitate. And she goes, please don't do this. I will give you anything else you ask, but not this. And he goes, I claim you, Aelin, to whatever end. That part is so...
Is that the first time he says to... No,
I don't know. The first time he says it's to around whatever. The first time. That but, he says it.
Oh, forehead tattoo.
Yes. And then they go into the oath a little bit, and here I have underlined, he's telling her that she could trust the prince, and more than that, more than anything, she could trust herself. And then he goes in to say, together, Fireheart, we'll find a way together, a court that will change the world.
And we kind of find out later how significant the blood oath is. Because when you're reading it, you're like, okay, it's a blood oath, but you don't realize that she only has really one spot on her court for the blood oath.
Yeah, because we find out.
It's not really a spoiler. Like, I don't really care.
He's just like so upset that.
He's mad that he didn't get the blood oath.
Because that was his whole life's purpose, basically, is to take the blood oath from Aelin, Queen of Terrasen.
Yeah.
Am I spoiling stuff? Anyway, I'm not.
No, that's no.
In Crown of Midnight.
Okay. It's like such a small spoiler. Like.
Yeah. And then he's like saying to her, say it, Aelin, say it. And she goes, do you promise to serve my court, Rowan Whitethorn, from now until the day you die? And he goes, I do, until my last breath and the world beyond to whatever end. So that part was like, oh my gosh.
Can someone crochet me that on a pillow or something?
Yes, please. We'll make t-shirts.
Someone Let's embroider it on a sweatshirt.
Let's do it. Let's make some merch to whatever end.
Yeah, this book, even though it was slow, like we said, her personal healing journey was so important. And Rowan was an essential part of her journey, which I love. He helped her come to accept her true self. And we really, really get to know who Celaena is in this book.
And when he starts calling her Fireheart. Fireheart.
My heart's on fire
to whatever end. Fireheart. I love that so much.
Yeah. So towards the end of this book, she's been running from her past ever since Sam passed away. And now in this book, she's finally
accepted it.
Accepting all of herself.
And I wanted to go a little bit in depth about this. So there's the one part where the Volg is torturing her, and that's like their form of torture, is showing whoever they're like sucking the soul from or taking over, kind of their that person's dark side. And a lot of people can't handle it. But this is when Aelin finally accepts that she is Aelin Ash River Galathinius. And now I'm saying that. Now I'm saying it right.
We practiced, which is such a parallel to ACOTAR, because it's the same with the Ouroboros mirror.
Yeah.
Mirror, I said that weird.
Yeah, where Feyre is like the only one that doesn't go mad from the Ouroboros mirror. Yeah,
because she looks in the mirror and she sees all of herself and she's so sure of who she is and she's accepted her past and present and everything that she is. She has the mental strength and the confidence to look in the mirror and be like, this is who I am and I accept that.
Yes.
And that's kind of exactly what Aelin did internally in this book.
And she's just like, yeah, she's accepting the dark side of herself, which will eventually allow her to accept everyone else's dark side. And when you don't accept that, I'm using that word so much, but it's the only thing I can think of. When you don't accept like the dark, deep trauma and things in yourself, which we all have and we all can relate to, when you don't do that, then you're not fully like letting yourself be yourself. And there wouldn't be good without bad. There wouldn't be light without dark. And that part was just so, so powerful because she was hiding from her true self this whole time. And she wanted to be Celaena Sardothian forever because there was so much that happened to her when she was younger and so much trauma that she had to go through, and she kind of just wanted to hide from that and not embrace it. And then when she finally embraced her dark side, she knew who she was, and she knew that she was Aelin. And I just thought that was so powerful, and I kind of just wanted to talk about how every artist, every creative mind, I think, has gone through something hard in their life. And everybody has gone through hard things, and we all cope differently, whatnot. And you can totally tell that shiz has happened to Sarah J. Maas because she, like, keeps bringing up these things, but it's a good learning experience. You know, you're reading this fun fantasy book, but there's also these moments that are just so powerful. And I think that every artist has that in them, and that is their way of showing the world what they feel and how they learned from it. And it's honestly beautiful. And they can create this amazing art. They can write these amazing books and paintings. And I mean, I know for me, I like to kind of express myself through dancing and through my choreography and even just through writing or drawing. And yeah, there's Carl Jung. He talks about like our shadow self, and I don't know like a ton about him, but I know this about him. He's I think he's a psychologist or something like that. And he talks about that a lot, just kind of what I was saying, how when you have to fully accept who you are, and all parts of yourself. And that's a part of truly loving yourself and knowing yourself. And when you do that, then you can know and love someone else. And I think we really get to see that a lot more in the series because of this moment that Aelin had. And the whole book, I was like, well, when is it going to happen? When are we going to start calling her Aelin? When is she going to accept herself?
And it wasn't even in this book. It wasn't until, was it Queen of Shadows or was it?
No, it was in this book.
In this book?
Yeah. Well, Sarah J. Maas doesn't start calling her Aelin in this book, but this is when her as a character accepts it. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
And then in Queen of Shadows, she's like, don't call me Selena. Don't call me Selena anymore.
Yeah.
And then just, do you have anything else you want to say about that idea?
No. I just, if that doesn't convince you to read this series.
Yes.
Like, it is fantasy, but it's, you know, like Shelby said, the author pulls real emotions from life, and I think has a lot of really cool lessons, and
that's what makes her so good, is it is personal, and there's a little bit of her in every single book.
And I love a book. If a book doesn't make me feel something, even if it's sad, angry, happy, whatever, like, that's why I read, so that, to make me feel. And Sarah J. Maas is just so freaking good at that.
Mm-hmm. But then along the lines of that, I think we can kind of finish up with this a little bit. We hear this saying that Nehemia told Selena is, don't let that light go out. Mm-hmm. And you have that quote, like the full quote of it, I think is, we want to read that.
So from this book, the quote is, she would not let that light go out. She would fill the world with it, with her light, her gift. She would light up the darkness so brightly that all who were lost or wounded or broken would find their way to it, a beacon for those who still dwelled in that abyss. It would not take a monster to destroy a monster, but light to drive out darkness. She was not afraid.
And I loved that part, because it brings back, like, I will not be afraid, and don't let that light go out. Like, there's so many one-liners that are like, oh, like, you could just think of those in your own life, you know? Like, I will not be afraid, you know? Sam wasn't afraid. Selena wasn't afraid. Like, don't let your light go out. And then we kind of, we see that through Aelin, kind of at the end of the book, like, with her power and her fire. Right.
And that's so much a part of her accepting, because she has such a drive to make the world a better place, and she realizes in this book that she's the one with that power.
Yeah.
And that it wasn't going to, a monster isn't going to destroy a monster, it's light.
Yep.
To drive out the darkness. Yep. So, love that.
Love that. Very...
Sarah J. Maas, what are you doing to me?
I know. You are changing our brain chemistry.
ACOTAR already altered my brain chemistry.
I know. But we love it. It's so good. Love. So we hope that you guys enjoyed this. Give us a rating and review. We would love to hear from you guys. DM us your thoughts. Like, don't be afraid to direct message us, because obviously we like talking about these things, and we know that other people do too, and we would love to hear your thoughts of these books and anything else that we've talked about. Give us a follow on Instagram, eb.pod. That's B as in bagel, not V.
Sign up for notifications so that you can see when we drop new episodes, which we have been consistent in dropping episodes every Thursday for the past like 6 weeks. So yeah. Go us. This will be episode 7.
Whoa.
Yep.
That's crazy. I didn't know that.
So that's awesome. Once this episode drops, that will be 7 consecutive weeks of episodes. So go us.
Thank you for listening. We love you guys. Love Is there you. Anything else?
Like and subscribe.
Every time. Like and subscribe. We're still figuring out audio stuff. So just
hopefully stick it gets with better us. Every week, the audio. It has been a long journey of technical issues and learning. I've learned a lot, so go me, go Emily.
Yeah, everyone.
I'm killing it.
Everyone send Emily a gift or some love, because she edits these episodes.
Send me
episodes.
A sweet treat for my editing sessions.
Give us a Venmo for sweet treats every week. Just kidding. But yeah, I think that's it.
Yep.
Okay.
Thanks for listening. Okay.
Bye. Ooh.